This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm Aaron, joined as always by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate? And how was the intro this week?
I noticed, I feel like you intentionally infused it with a bit of growl there. After last week, of course, I said that it felt a little bassier. But not necessarily growly. I feel like you brought the growl this week. I don't know that I like the growl, but I did notice it. So we'll have to throw it out to the listeners and the one guy who always texts me about your "this is now" that it's become a thing. Aaron, have you seen the new Kevin Spacey drop?
I haven't, but I'm so excited to hear about it. I saw that it dropped, but I didn't get a chance to watch it yet. So I hope you'll tell me about it.
He's what a sacrifice taken for the podcast here, not watching the new, the yearly tradition of the Kevin Spacey Christmas Eve video. Not particularly funny, because it is just basically saying, wow, people have had a hard time this year. Only because I've had a hard time am I able to help the people that come to me with their hard times. So really putting himself over. And then he just goes on to say, and a lot of people that have come to me with their problems have, been on the verge of taking their own life. Of course, famously, after Kevin Spacey released his video last year, a number of his accusers committed suicide. And so this year was a suicide prevention PSA. Nothing really to sink your teeth into as far as the inanity of the thing
right.
That he does, but a fully insane, surreal, out of bounds, just absurd evolution in the ongoing Kevin Spacey Christmas video saga.
Yes, he is no longer asking us to let him be frank. He's no longer killing us with kindness.
No, he's saying, go ahead, dial that 1-800-XMAS number, which is a suicide prevention hotline.
All right. We're also joined by Mike. What's up, buddy?
Hey, all, it's your old pal. It's weird how now the absolutely absurd Kevin Spacey clips are one of the big things I look forward to on Christmas. It used to be, people staying up for midnight mass watching this is What a Wonderful Life. Now, society, we've gotten to a point to see what is this absolute creep and weirdo going to do? So it's a real statement of my general belief that we all lost our minds in the mid 90s. This is the last evolution of it. I'm still trying to figure out, pinpoint the time where I believe that society has greatly just lost it more so than ever. Don't know if it's either when Princess Diana died or the Monica Lewinsky trial. I think it's one of those two.
Could be when American Beauty came out. If we just want to tie Kevin Spacey into this.
This was just addressed on the Comedy Bang Bang that I was listening to this morning, the yearly best of. Paul F. Tompkins posited that it was immediately after the release of Charlie Bit My Finger.
You see, I think that's a little late, though. I think Charlie Bit My Finger is a little late because we were wilding out before that.
Yeah, but I think it's really the point at which everybody got on the internet. When the internet was just a hobbyist thing and for teenagers in their AOL chat rooms, it had not infected and corrupted and debased every part of the human experience. I guess he was taking the Charlie Bit My Finger as the point at which basically everything and everyone was just always on the internet at all times.
Right. The point of inflection. I get what Paul F. Tompkins was doing there. Friend of the show, Paul F. Tompkins, of course.
Paul F. Tompkins famously did voice work on one of the SmackDown versus Raw games as like the tutorial trainer was voiced by Paul F. Tompkins for some reason. Actually, I talked to Rachel Millman about this because she was corresponding with him, and he apparently hates wrestling, so not actually a friend of the show. But I would like to get the inside dirt on how a man, one of the funnier people on the planet, came to do the voice work for the SmackDown versus Raw trainer.
Well, fans, friends, it's Christmas Eve, and Santa has brought you lots of goodies in the form of this wonderful podcast, and you can get more of our presence over at our Twitter account, at Everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the podcast app of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating and review if that podcast app is the Apple Podcast app. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do so is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and give yourself a little Christmas present in the form of bonus audio from your favorite EE boys. On this episode, in addition to all the normal stuff we do, we're going to run down the EE 2020 awards. We laid out all the nominees on our Patreon. Our patrons voted, but we will bring the winners directly to you for free on this episode. But let's get started with Elite or Delete from a very late night episode of AEW Dynamite. Nate, what was your favorite thing from the show last night?
I think the thing that I was most impressed with on this show was basically that both the young up-and-coming tag teams were both put in very big positions, and I think both asserted themselves really well. You had the opening match, the match meant to hopefully retain some of that NBA audience with MJF and Chris Jericho against Top Flight. Top Flight, who is, you know, a couple of teenagers, basically, who have been in the company for all of, like, 2 weeks. And then you had the main event match with the Young Bucks versus the Acclaimed. You know, very easy to imagine how either of these matches could have been much rougher. You have, you know, not that either of these teams show that they're, like, particularly green, but they don't have a ton of experience under their belt. And I really thought both matches were pretty good, and both of those teams showed up and showed out in really big spots on this television show. So, yeah, I think that was the big bright spot for me here.
And I would say that the team that impressed me more out of this was Top Flight, because the Bucks have plugged people into their formula before, and it's kind of hidden some of the issues with other tag teams, more mainly being Private Party. So I expected the Acclaim match with the Young Bucks for the tag team titles to be a solid match, just from knowing, like, all right, the Acclaimed are a solid tag team. They've really gelled on Dark, and you put them with the Young Bucks, that's going to be a good match unless something disastrous happens. But the fact that Top Flight against Chris Jericho and MJF were able to really equip themselves well on the show was kind of remarkable. And it was in a way that when you, like, look at this, like, Chris Jericho is older than both these guys combined. And Chris Jericho, as has gone along with Twitter, was not looking in his best shape last night. So I came away being really impressed. And it's something that in this tag team division that sometimes has periods of feeling real stale, where it feels like that unless you're in the title program, you're not really doing a whole lot. I felt like that this was a significant step forward for the division coming out of last night's show.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about related to this selection was Chris Jericho. I'll go ahead and drop our listener Elite here. Swarls, Elite, NBA Twitter, roasting the shit out of Chris Jericho. If you saw that going around, there's just like a handful of, or a screenshot of a handful of tweets of people being like, fuck, Chris Jericho looks awful. You know, people probably hadn't seen him since the 90s or whatever. So I guess when I immediately saw, like, the first thing on TV was Chris Jericho, and at the time, I thought, oh, that's a good idea. But it's like, wait, am I, like, brainwashed from watching him every week to not realize how fucking insane he looks? And actually, it's a bad move to be like, oh, they've got this old-ass dude who looks awful now as, like, their main guy.
Yeah, I wondered that also, mostly catalyzed by this NBA Twitter screen cap. It's hard to say, because we're all, not only are we, like, in a wrestling bubble now, but I think probably every wrestling fan has a relationship with Chris Jericho that is, like, firmly outside the normal person's understanding of Chris Jericho. You know, going back to WCW and then, like, oh, yeah, Chris Jericho jumping to the WWF was, like, a significant you know, a sign in the WCW versus WWF battle. You know, this was the place where the young, exciting talents go is to WWF. I'm reminded a couple years back when Chris Jericho was doing one of his later WWE runs, a new fan to wrestling. It was Matt V. Brady on Twitter added me and was like, "Hey, what's the deal with this Chris Jericho guy? Everybody loves him, but I don't fucking get it." And I tried to explain the appeal and the significance of Chris Jericho and couldn't really enunciate it. It's like, well, he's really funny and he has good matches. And, you know, we've put over on this show a bunch of his segments multiple times and, you know, some of his matches and commentary performances. But I do think coming from the outside, you probably see a guy who's 25 years older than you remember him being and, you know, hewing closer to that idea of the aging rock and roller more than like the ironic comedic aging rock and roller that wrestling fans kind of accept him as. And yeah, maybe it's not coming across as fresh and exciting and vivacious as you want the brand to.
Yes, I agree with all that. I wonder if I see what they're doing. And someone pointed out like, oh, the first voice you heard was Jim Ross and the first person you saw was Chris Jericho. And it's like, I don't know, maybe that's not a turn on to people.
<It's> Yeah. Like...
Yeah, it's like I saw some of the tweets that are like, oh, this is like new WWE or WWF.
Right. Because
you have those touchstones.
And the next big thing was Sting on the show, right?
Right, yeah. And I also like see the logic of what they did. I just don't think that they thought out from outside the bubble in a way. And I think that's what it came down to.
Yeah, it's hard to find the balance because you want some of those things to appeal to people and be like, oh, I remember Sting. I want to see Sting. But you also don't want it to be like, oh, yeah, this is fucking knockoff WWF.
Well, you don't want it to be TNA, right? You don't want it to be like...
Right. They had Chris Jericho in there with three very young guys, MJF and Top Flight. So it's like, I think the idea is in the right place there. It's like, hey, here's the one guy I know, and here's three other exciting young talents. Yeah, just you got to find that balance somehow. And it's going to be a different balance for every viewer, too. So who knows?
Right. It's not quite like TNA having like fucking Jeff Jarrett as the champion, or even later when like Hogan was basically running TNA when it was, you know, long past his prime. They do. I mean, of course, the thing that makes sense is maybe somebody remembers Jericho and then that makes them watch, but then they latch on to these other guys. So I agree, Nate, that I think they're probably going about it the right way, but it does concern you when it's like, I don't think about how crazy Jericho looks, but I guess if you haven't seen him, or if you just turn this on, it's like, wait, I'm supposed to believe that's like fighting other people.
Well, it's like,
I mean, he looks insane.
Yeah,
he looks insane, and we're in whatever correct level of irony to be like, it's awesome that he looks so fucking crazy,
right?
And other people are not going to be on that same level, so
yeah. All right, Mike, what was your favorite thing from last night?
Well, Nate went off board and took what I was going to talk about first. Ooh. So I'm just going to go with what y'all expect out of me. Pac versus Butcher. Oh,
yeah.
This match, it was such a smart match for like a TV match. Like the idea of like Butcher taking 75% of it and then Pac finally kind of getting it together. Then you have all the groups kind of getting interplayed, and then Pac pins Butcher clean. And then you have Archer and Pac do kind of another like stare down, will they, won't they thing. And it's something that they've been kind of lucky about how this all kind of turned out, with like Pac being able to be back in the States, especially considering what's going on in the UK now. The idea of the Lucha Brothers, one of them's injured than the other, and then, you know, Eddie Kingston being able to appear on microphone and be genuinely charming with him and Jim Ross while antagonistic towards the rest of the commentary team. And it just kind of like, and they gave us this match, like the big 11 o'clock, the big second hour bridge. And I felt like that was perfect for the kind of thing. And I came away with this going like, hell yeah, Butcher. Like, I was going to like this match anyways, because Pac's in it, but Butcher was awesome in it as well. It was a great time. We got to see a flying burrito from Butcher, which is tremendous. I mean, if someone's going to like call up like Manny Fernandez, I'm going to have a good time. So I had a great time with this match.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good match. It feels like it's been forever since we saw the Black Arrow. I don't think he's done it. He was even not doing it for a while, and then he was doing like maybe a shooting star press into the Brutalizer at some point. Mm-hmm.
That's what he did before.
Yeah. So it's pretty crazy that like Pac, who is like one of the top heel performers in the professional wrestling business, is like now a de facto babyface because of this layoff and coming back and being against Eddie Kingston and his family. But I mean, it works. You know, I love Pac. I love rooting for Pac. I don't care if he's a bastard. He's with my good Lucha friends. So big pop for the Black Arrow.
We haven't talked much yet about the Butcher's gear here, which I think must be remarked upon.
Hey, talking about looking insane.
Yeah, so he had these like high water black pants on, you know, just below the knee, with like a red belt that had a sash with a little dangly thing that said Butcher. Kicked ass. I mean, but it was just like a wild look for him.
Yeah, it's like some martial arts adjacent look, like, oh yeah, he's going over to the dojo to throw later.
Real Masato Yoshino ass tights out of nowhere. Like it works for him though. He should wear these breeches anyway.
All I know is he looked like he felt good about himself when he was wearing them, but it was not confidence for sure. It was all Karate Man. Honestly,
take a walk on that one.
Like I like it when I tell a joke and Nate laughs at it, but I like it better when I tell a joke and Nate makes an involuntary noise that shows how much he hated it. It brings me more joy.
I mean, I do. I appreciate that one because there was actually like a twist to the joke where you didn't just like make the reference out. All ego, remember that? But there was actually no, you surprised me with that a little bit.
I am low key sick with it, so. No big surprise there.
Don't know what that was.
I think it's my turn. I'm just going to go, you know, right down the barrel here. I'm going to say Kenny Omega, my elite pick from last night, the promo that he cut. I just think this is the best wrestling character in pro wrestling period right now. He's hitting on all cylinders. Don Callis is like really works as part of this act. You know, they're doing the little TNA thing about Phoenix, and he's like, he's a little injury prone. Yeah, I don't think we want him back. That's great. But it's just like, I don't know. I'm not sure that if you told me Kenny Omega was just going to be cutting heel promos that were just like not in his weird character voice, just him looking in the camera and doing a promo, I would have assumed it was going to be bad. And it's just been excellent. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Enjoyed his shirt a lot. And I also really enjoy Callis doing this thing where he puts Kenny on a different level than the talent. He's like, oh, the talent. You're just a fucking wrestler. You don't get to make decisions because we're office over here. And that could be bad. Like there is a version of it's like, oh, it's a fucking, you know, corrupt management storyline again. But I guess because Callis is coming from another company, it kind of avoids that pitfall. And just makes it fun to me that like Don Callis is out there pretending TNA wouldn't die to have Phoenix, or like reducing Pac and be like, oh, he's just talent. That's funny to me.
It's just something that this act comes off so well. They pop off the screen, not only because they are wearing insane things, like Don Callis's rose colored glasses are just remarkable, and then Kenny's jacket, but the promos and the way that they're doing this is in a way that we haven't really seen from Kenny Omega, that it's not like the overwhelming, like super villain character that you saw. It's not like the it is a level of the egotism that you saw before, but it's also very, I would argue it's much more rooted in reality than anything else he's really done. So it comes across like a big champion. Like it's one of those things that seeing him walk around with the title belt appear in other places, I hate throwing like the touring champion comp on it, but we're kind of getting that vibe from him that it's like, oh, Ric Flair is cutting a promo about him coming to Birmingham, Alabama to face hot local upstart here. And you kind of get that vibe from it that it's a cultural touchpoint that would be a bit older than I would say most of like the more casual AEW fans, but it's something that it provides a lot that I think everyone can kind of get behind and get the idea of this is who Kenny Omega now is as a heel champion. It comes across incredibly well.
Yeah, it works. I think it's like we were talking about earlier, it's hard to kind of divorce yourself from the bubble, but I'm pretty sure this shtick, if you're at all interested in watching pro wrestling, I think this works. All right, well, let's talk about the things that we didn't like from the show last night. I mean, number one has to be too fucking late. AB's old. This was too late.
Yeah, that was not a problem. That was fine.
I was so tired. Nate, what was your least favorite thing from the show?
Abaddon.
Boo.
That's it. I've done my spiel before. You know, I don't have anything to add. Just not. It's not. I don't like it. It's not for me. I think it's bad.
The Shane is something that now she's eating Hikaru Shida. Like that's now something that's happened on TV.
Yeah, it doesn't seem hygienic.
In the day and age and in the year 2020, come on, y'all. If you have a living dead girl out there, you're going to have to make sure that like they're not going to be biting someone. And that's what happened. At least it seems like we're going to get the blow off to it relatively soon. So Nate's grown Abaddon thing can... You only have so much longer that you're going to have to deal with this, I feel like. So.
It's easy for me. It makes this part of the show a cakewalk.
you can just lead off and say, yeah, Abaddon still exists. I hate it.
Yep.
I mean, to me, the only real downside here is that they're going to have a match eventually. I feel like that's probably not going to go well. But I don't know. I mean, it's bad. Like, I'll give you that, that it's bad. But, like... The women's division, reached a real point where it's like they don't really care about it. So at least this is funny. Like, I think I can at least take
this. I mean, they're doing the Jade Cargill angle, but this is like the one angle they're doing. It's pretty weak.
Oh, it's super weak. But it is funny to see her. Like, my favorite part was when Shida poked her with the kendo stick, which is just like, you know, classic no-no in like a horror film. You know, you don't poke the dead person. Like, are they still alive? And she was playing dead, and she just attacks Shida. It's just bad.
Yeah,
felt bad for Shida there. Mike.
Yeah, buddy.
What did you really dislike from this show?
Well, I have a personal quest that you all both know, and that is to ensure that whenever someone searches Spears in AEW on the Google machine or your DuckDuckGo or your Bing, that one of the first responses you get is this very show, Everything Elite. But sadly, we had another Sean Spears reboot, this like sit-down promo that it's just, they're giving time to this guy who has never been over, was only over when he played Home Run Derby with Cody's head. So... it was just one of those things that, like, I don't need to see Sean Spears on my TV anymore. And the sooner they kind of just drum him out or give him a new gimmick, give him a new name, the better for all of us. I mean, we need those SEO hits. So that whole Sean Spears thing, I can do without.
Well, they did, I guess, halfway maybe give him a new gimmick or start the road to a new gimmick. I kind of, like, my inclination on this is just not even address it because it's like, well, it, you know, was... 30 seconds long. I'm fine with giving him 30 seconds of time. Everybody on the roster should get 30 seconds of time if they want it. Because I like the way the whole show moves when they have those short segments interspersed and you go from one thing to the next before you get back to your lengthy matches. I think that makes the show feel well paced. But you know, this is not going to go anywhere. I think we're probably in agreement that this newest re-gimmick, this newest repackage for Sean Spears is not going to elevate him to a top guy. It's just, you know, he's going to be in the same space that he's always been, except for the, you know, immediate aftermath of hitting Cody with the chair. So, I don't know. The glove was very stupid, so at least they got rid of that. They like it. It's at least an improvement. He said he's going to go away. So, you know, he's never going to be a top singles guy. So whatever.
The thing that's so weird about it is, I know he probably doesn't accept this, but like, his highest best use was as like the white meat babyface who had the kind of ironic following in NXT where everybody chanted for him when he came out. Like, he is as like a babyface who is supposed to kind of keep up with you for a little bit and then lose in the end, is a competent wrestler in that way.
Here's the thing. He's like a lot better than The Miz and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's a pretty good talker. He's just cringe. But if he, like, put it in the right way, he's a pretty good talker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of funny comparatively. You know, The Miz is, like, my go-to comparison point for, like, a guy who's just the absolute shits, but, like, WWE fans think is, like, great.
Yeah, he's the replacement-level WWE wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. And Sean Spears is like way better at it. Like Miz could never, like, his promo in this exact spot would never feel as natural as this Sean Spears one did. But yeah, you know, this is still not going to go anywhere. So
yeah, it's something now that through the 16 months of this or 18 months of promotion, this is now his fourth rebrand. And that's like a remarkable thing. Like, let's take a moment and just think about his timeline. First, we saw him working out and beating up people on top of a parking deck. Then he baseball swung Cody's head.
Okay, don't take out that he was in that, like, lime green sports car or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, he was super sexy rich guy.
Super sexy rich guy. Then the chairman of AEW, then Tully Blanchard. Then he got the glove and feuded with Scorpio Sky for whatever reason. We still never know why that was a feud. And now he's, I guess, going back to basics. I mean, Tully seems like he's...
He seems like he said he's leaving. He said, I'll come back when you guys...
Yeah.
maybe he's just gone. I don't know. Let's do this. Can we come up with a gimmick that would make Sean Spears work?
Tengai again. Or baseball swings. Baseball or headhunting. Tengai or headhunting.
The chair thing is definitely the best thing that he's done, but they're not... it seems they're not going to do that because people don't want to see the unprotected hair headshots. So,
I do, frankly.
I mean, it's literally the best thing that he's done. So, if they're intent on getting him over, you know what would be a good evolution to that character?
What's that?
So, Cody had his open challenge for his TNT title, you know, and brought in a bunch of indie guys. Sean Spears should do an open challenge where he only brings in indie guys and hits them with unprotected headshots. And be like, that's right, you're not under AEW contract. You have no, you know, we're not responsible for your health after this whatsoever.
Give them a rugby helmet and be like, all right, well, you have protection. Now you're eating it.
That would be...
But he has to explicitly say all that. Like, that can't be
right. Yes. You're like, Tony Khan won't let me hit anybody in the fucking head with a chair anymore. So I'm booking my own guys.
Here's a waiver.
That might get the heat on the wrong people there, but I think that's funny. That's the best route I've got.
Yeah, it's like, he's like, hey, you guys, I mean, he's got to go all the way. He's like, I know it's a pandemic and you can't work indie. So if you want a payday, all you got to do is come on AEW and let me hit you in the head with a chair.
And it also, like, still builds the Cody thing because it's a response to Cody's open challenge. I think that's the route they got to go.
And Cody's got to be, like, coming out like, Sean, you have to stop this. You know, like, this is insane. But it's like, there's some...
The hospital bills that you're incurring on this company.
But there's some contractual reason. You
No hospital bills for the company. They leave them to pay their own bill.
These are contractors, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love this.
Home run derby, Sean Spears.
We've come up with two.
Presented like the Master Lock Challenge, but it's the Chairman Challenge.
We've had two gimmick ideas on this show that I think AEW should run with. One is this one, and two is the Drama King as the true heir to the Eddie Guerrero wrestling legacy. And I'm just saying, like, listen to this show and take some of our ideas is all I'm saying.
I wonder if you put Sean Spears and Drama King in the ring together, if I could tell them apart.
Well, I that's a little rude because Sean Spears
is... They seem like the same to me.
Sean Spears has a very well-built body, and the Drama King is, like, very underfed, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay.
They look very different. I mean, if real body guys know.
Okay. Sure.
Ferrante.
He definitely doesn't listen anymore. This is mostly, I think, probably a symptom of me not having seen the Drama King for, I don't know, 3 years, if ever.
If ever?
I mean, where would I have seen the Drama King? What was his tag team?
I'm just saying, you were watching the NXT run, right?
Did he tag with Simon Gotch in NXT? Is that what it was? He
sure did. Vaude Villains.
I may have seen the Vaude Villains on one takeover.
Well, and then you probably saw him when he was paired with Rusev.
For sure, no.
No?
No. It was out by that point.
It was wild, I'll tell you that.
I guess it was over. I hear it was over.
It was very over. Well, yeah, that's where the whole Rusev Day thing came from.
Yeah.
All right. My turn. I know we already talked about this a little, but... And I'm not deleting Alex Gracia. Alex, if you're listening, I'm very fond of you. I think you seem like a very nice young woman. But here's what I'm mad about. Everybody knows I'm mad. So there was the whole thing. Was it Serena Deeb who said, like, actually, we can't feature any more women on TV because they're not TV ready. They're going to hurt each other if we put them on TV. And then they have, in one segment, they have Alex Gracia and Abaddon as like the two like wrestling talents that they're featuring with Hikaru Shida, neither of whom have shown any capacity as pro wrestlers, you know, like in-ring wrestlers. Poor Alex Gracia, again, who I adore. But Alex, I've had watched her now for, I don't know, 3 years probably since she first showed up in Stardom, and just hasn't improved in like 1%. She's just not good at wrestling, and that's okay. It's not for everybody, but they throw her ass on TV to have this match with Hikaru Shida when she has on Dark the worst matches you have ever seen in like a major company. It's remarkable. It's insane. Just like doesn't have the ability to like to string spots together in any way, but they throw her on TV. So it's like, I know that they're lying to me, but stop it. Stop lying to me. Just be honest about why you won't feature women on this television.
Well, here's the thing. There are women that can wrestle that never get on TV.
I know.
Penelope Ford, you know, I think it's booked
the last
for Dark.
Time she wrestled.
It's booked for Dark, so she's in wrestling shape, I believe. Has a big angle coming up. Why don't you have her beat somebody in 2 minutes? Big Swole, not on the show. Britt Baker, not on the show.
Rosa Deeb,
Nyla Rose, fucking
Layla.
Shanna's back in the States. Shanna's in the country.
Yep.
All these women who can wrestle and are theoretically featured parts of your women's division because you've like signed them to deals, and just not. Allie can wrestle. And I don't even think was involved in the Butcher segment on this show. So, yeah, it's just mystifying.
And it's something that, as you said, AB, she's a known quantity at this point. Alex is. And we know that what you see is what you get. And if Serena is saying, oh, we have people that they're not TV ready, then how are you going to get them TV ready when you're giving slots to people that are known quantities and we don't expect them to improve? Why? I mean, I know Kylan King, this was for people who didn't watch Stark, they made a match that between Kylan King and Alex Gracia, the winner got to face Hikaru Shida in a non-title match. The match that Kylan King had with Hikaru Shida was miles better. Just run that match back. It's an inconsequential match. The results and the records are about to reset on January 1. Run that match back because at least you're developing someone there. Like, if you are of the belief that that statement was done in good faith, then you have to be taking proactive steps to have a future where you feel like that people are TV ready and you aren't just bad faith putting people out there that, as we saw, it just falls flat. And it was out of any realm of expectations to think that this match was going to be any good, right? Like we all knew what this match was going to be, and it was exactly that.
Yeah, and it's also... You can't tell me that all the matches on the show needed to be as long as they were. You can't cut 2 minutes from both tag matches and the Jurassic Express trios and like have 6 minutes to do another match, like the show would be better for it. All those matches would be better for being shorter.
Yeah, it's like I've not that I have any delusion that Alex Grassi is spending her time listening to our podcast, but I want to be clear that I don't blame her whatsoever. Like, this is AEW's problem. You know, if they called me up and said, Aaron, we want you to do 3 minutes with Hikaru Shida, I'd be like, sure, why not? You know, I'll embarrass myself, but sure.
You must be fond of the pink dream, because you usually don't go to this much effort to make clear that it's not a personal thing with the people you're burying.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Everything that I've ever seen about the pink dream makes her seem like just a delightful human being. So I don't want to be too negative toward her. I will forever be haunted by her not being booked for the Stardom New York show, but showing up and hugging and hanging out with some of the wrestlers afterward. It was very cute. So I don't know. I hope I'm wrong about Alex, I guess is what I'll say. Our listener, D-Elite, our good friend Tharo, says, Sting's cool, but we got to go somewhere with this instead of rerunning the same thing every week, please.
Yeah. I mean, I think the third consecutive week of this promo battle between Sting and Tony's there, and then the Taz family shows up. Yeah, would love forward momentum.
I mean, I think my Elite a few weeks ago was like, oh, they actually had some ideas for Sting. They didn't just like show up with Sting, and then they have crapped on me by not doing anything at all with this. All right, the show opened, as we said, with Chris Jericho and MJF defeat. Oh, I skipped over ratings. We don't have ratings yet, so we can't really talk about them.
I'm very glad you went back to hit that. Thank you.
I hate messing up my format sheet. I apologize. Chris Jericho and MJF defeated Top Flight. MJF pinned Darius after the Heat Seeker. And then after the match, we got, a Jake Hager promo in the wild. We also needed this instead of another women's segment. Ever since we came together, we've won. Every member has done their job, except Wardlow. Where is Wardlow? Oh, he's away on family business. But this is family. This is family business, Hager said. He said, but I show up and do my job. So next week on Dynamite, Jake Hager versus Wardlow.
Yeah, he doesn't need to talk. They have so many guys that, I mean, I guess the point is he has a personal issue within the stable.
Yeah.
So it's not like he can have Chris Jericho cut this promo on Wardlow for him, but yeah, he's just not a good talker.
He just should have pre-taped it. I mean, he can do can do okay on a pre-tape.
Yeah, there's ways that they could have worked around this rather than giving Jake Hager a live mic in ring.
Then we had the acclaimed Buck Hunt video that they had posted on Twitter. So I'd seen this on Twitter, but basically a music video of a song they made called Buck Hunt about the Young Bucks.
It's really good. Like, great usage of their gimmick and the fact that AEW generally has very good pre-tapes. And they had some good punchlines here about the Young Bucks. I like them appropriating or taking that, you know, AEW hater criticism of like, oh, the Young Bucks, they paid off Uncle Dave to give them all the star ratings. I like kind of incorporating that into their heel act because, you know that appeals to some whatever brain dead contingent to the wrestling audience.
Yeah, and we had a not Atticus Kogar there, which, you know.
Oh, was it Otis Kogar?
Otis Kogar, yeah, there we go. Otis Kogar, someone who looked like a combination of Atticus Kogar and Jordan Oliver was on there, and the real ones out there got popped at this.
Somebody in the Discord said Atticus Cougar, and I just want to say that's his problem. That's all. All right, Sting was out with Tony Schiavone. Yeah, he had this really weird thing about wanting to come here to be a part of the charge Cody was leading, even though, as our good friend Aaron Tao pointed out on Twitter, he said a week or two ago that he wasn't here for Cody. And then he did a Dusty Rhodes impression.
It was good. It was the best part of the promo, I thought.
It was, but it's just like this whole thing is so strange. We were also talking about this in the Discord last night of like, Crow Sting was this like mysterious character. That was the point. He never talked. We only saw him up in the rafters. And now it's just like Steve Borden, but in the Crow Sting gimmick. It's just like a very weird thing.
Yeah, it is. It, It's unusual, but I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's not that unusual because this is what he's been for far longer than that 1 year leading up to Starrcade 97 or whatever. Like, he's been doing this act in TNA and then in WWE for like the last, you know, 10 plus years or something. He's in TNA forever. So,
but I didn't see that. So it does.
Right. You're right about that. But this is also what he is. And it generally works. Like, people like it. Sting's cool. I don't know.
I just want to see him put the surfer paint back on. That's really all. That's all I'm calling for here.
Joker paint.
the surfer paint, and he has to bring back the high top.
Ooh, can we get a surfer Joker?
Okay, let's workshop this for a second. Is he going to be like? Is it going to be the surfer paint, but in Joker colors, or is it going to be the Joker paint, but it's going to be made up to look like he's surfing?
I think it has to be the Joker paint, but in the outline of the surfer paint.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Like, it's got the shape of the surfer paint, but the color scheme and content of the paint is Joker style.
I like this.
I think it's got some legs. Is his surfboard going to be something Joker-fied? Because that's the other aspect to it.
Well, I think it's a big big grin, and it says "Why so serious?" on it.
Sure,
that's my initial inclination.
Gotta keep it simple sometimes. he references Darby, who of course has a spotlight on him up in the high seats. But before he can say anything to Darby, Team Taz comes out. They're sick of him sticking his nose in their business. I'm like, dude, you motherfuckers come out every week. Stink's trying to cut a promo. Who's sticking whose nose where?
I think you just said Stink.
I did just now?
Yeah. Stink's trying to cut a promo.
They're going to attack him, but the lights go out and Darby appears in the ring. You don't mind this, Mike or Nate. You're mad about the Sheenon, but you don't mind this where he just shows up.
You know why? Because they showed Darby leaving. So it's like a logical explanation for, oh, he left and then the lights went out and then he climbed into the ring while the lights were out. So it made perfect sense. I have complained on this show about doing the lights out gimmick too much.
Yeah, they do a lot of that. Taz said he's happy to wait until January 6th for when Cage and Darby are going to wrestle. Cage kind of complains. He doesn't want to wait, but Taz wins and they kind of leave. And then Sting and Darby are left in the ring to continue making, frankly, pretty erotic eye contact as we fade out of this segment.
Is Jared Leto the most surfer Joker there's been? He's the most like Los Angeles Joker, I think, without question.
What about, I'm just trying to think of like more.
Heath Ledger, I mean, he was Australian.
That's true, but that didn't come across in his performance.
That's fair.
He was, you know, that was very dark and brooding. I would never go on a surfboard. That was more Batman voice than anything. We don't surf in Gotham.
I would say though that Jack Nicholson had like the surfer colors more.
Sure,
with his character.
We don't surf in Gotham. We have no beaches. It is cold. That's my bad.
I watched the Harley Quinn movie the other day on the Mac, living the Max life.
Hell yeah.
And they just made Gotham Los Angeles. Like they go and buy tacos. It's like sunny. On like fucking Rodeo Drive. And it's like, yeah, this is Gotham. Yeah. Right.
Warner Brothers just doesn't care. Yeah. They don't even care at this point. Like, I respect it in a way. Going like, yeah, no, Gotham's just going to be everywhere. Then is Metropolis next going to be Omaha, Nebraska? Because that's what I want to see.
Yeah, but Gotham just encapsulates all parts of the
metro.
Yeah, the greater U.S., meaning the three most populated cities.
MJF is backstage. He, you know, tries to point out that the cameraman is not hidden. He's actually invited the cameraman. It's like, just let go of this. Like,
no, I like it. I like it here because it also makes him seem like a phony, even though.
Yes, that's true. That's true. He's going into a room where Santana and Ortiz are, they don't like him. They're getting up when he comes in. MJF says that he knows Santana lost someone close to him. I think we talked about this last week, but his stepfather recently passed away. And MJF talks about how he also lost his grandfather recently. He knows how hard that is. He's here for Santana if he needs anything. Santana tells him to keep his head up. They shake hands, hug, and then Ortiz comes through and they also shake hands. So a sweet little moment.
Yeah, so I like it because it also raises the question like, oh, is he a phony or is this genuine? And then we don't know. But if they're doing, you know, maybe this is how MJF gets part of the inner circle on his side for the ultimate inner circle implosion. A little bit of intrigue there.
I was really holding my breath, afraid that he was going to make some off-color joke about Santana's stepfather dying.
Yeah.
I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been annoying.
Yeah. Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Marco Stunt defeated Colt Cabana 5-10. Jungle Boy pinned 5 with an assisted power bomb. After the match, Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview the winners, but Tully and FTR interrupted on the Tron. Tully said FTR is the 2020 tag team of the year. He says he knows the Jurassic Express guys want to make a name off of FTR, but if Marco sticks his nose in, Tully might have a flashback to the 80s.
Marco flipping out after he said that.
Yeah, that was the highlight to me is like Marco got actually offended that some old guy talked shit about him.
And the way that like he like started flying around and then both of them caught him at the same time was pretty great visual image. Great work from Marco here. Match was fine. It was a decent match. You know, it's what you expect. I love seeing Allen Angels each time. And, you know, Colt Cabana is like the weird member of the Dark Order is interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. I guess they must just be waiting on Brody to come back to figure out where they're going with the Colt story, because the whole thing was, you know, Colt was being initiated and then Brody got mad at him for losing a match or whatever, but then Evil Uno was, you know, still being nice to him or whatever. So I guess you need Brody back to continue the angle of, oh, the leader of the Dark Order actually doesn't like this guy. That computes to me, but seems like it's been on the back burner for a while now.
Yeah, Dark Order is just kind of back on the treadmill. I mean, they just are doing the same stuff over and over, waiting for Brody, I guess.
Yes, but at least they did find a couple cute little stories to do in the interim. The Adam Page thing is good, genuinely good. And the 7 Dusty Rhodes thing, or Dustin Rhodes thing, is like, oh, that's a fine little holdover feud for Evil Uno to get a little more presence on the show. So yeah, it is on the back burner, but I don't know. It's not getting tiresome to me.
Kenny Omega is backstage. He talks about how Fenix chokes every chance he gets. And now you have to face someone who doesn't love you. He's referring to him facing his brother previously. In fact, someone who doesn't even like you. Honestly, Kenny says he's afraid he might put Fenix out, but maybe Impact will take you back. But Don Callis says he doesn't know. Fenix is a little injury prone, but they could call Conan. And so Conan gets, I think, his first shout out on AEW television.
Conan was in the Las Vegas vignette.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I apologize.
So Conan is maybe he's AAA and Inner Circle affiliated.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas Don Callis is super elite and TNA affiliated. There's a lot of moving alliances and allegiances going on.
We will have the yarn chart in 2021.
Now, is Conan the canonical booker of AAA in AAA's story? I feel like maybe not.
Kind of. Like, it's something that's like mentioned that like he has power within the company, okay, but he's not like canonically like the decision maker, even though everyone knows he is. It's just one of those things that's not kind of referred, because he was affiliated with Kenny and the Bucks when they came down in 2019, because he was the heat magnet so they could get any heat whatsoever.
Yes, but then was simultaneously opposed to Cody, despite Cody being with Kenny and the Bucks at that time,
right,
and sicked Taurus on Cody.
I mean, it's AAA. It all makes sense in
yeah,
AAA.
Yeah, all this stuff definitely makes sense. You just have to have the necessary lucha knowledge. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, as we said earlier, great promo, and I'm seriously going to do a yarn chart in my office of every trying to figure out every relationship and everything out there. It's probably going to take up the greater part of a wall. So yeah,
I look forward to seeing that. Pac defeated the Butcher, as we discussed earlier. Lance Archer came out toward the end when it looked like Eddie was going to interfere. And then after the match, Pac and Lance and Penta just kind of stared at each other. So, you know, furthering their uneasy alliance. Jade Cargill's backstage. Essentially, she suggests that Brandi got pregnant because she was afraid of Jade, which I think is true. Then she says Shaq has called out Cody. I'm not sure that's true. So she's calling out Brandi and says they better find her a worthy opponent because she is tired of this shit.
Yeah, still very confused about how about Shaq's involvement.
Yeah.
To recap, Jade Cargill came out and confronted Cody because Cody was talking shit about the Giants that he beat. And Jade Cargill said, well, I know a real Giant. But then they had a backstage interview where Shaq was like not that fussed about Cody and didn't really seem to care. But he did really want to see Brandi and Jade Cargill go at it, which is not happening now. Yeah, just kind of, you know, a mess.
Yeah, making sense of this is something that it'll be interesting, like 5 years from now, talking about, like, so what was the original plan with this? Because I do no idea of what's going on at this point.
I mean, Cody and Brandi versus Jade and Shaq makes sense to me.
But it can't happen now.
But yeah, it can't happen now. And, you know, from Shaq's performance in that interview, didn't seem like he was particularly enthused about doing it anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I mean, I'm just saying here, I'm not a billionaire son or anything, but I'd get all the signatures on the piece of paper before I started putting bits of the story on my television. That's just what I would do.
I agree that is how most people would do it. I don't like the fact that story threads, you know, up and vanish from moment to moment. You know, some of them come back, which is great. But it is kind of fun to see them do stuff like, oh, let's heavily feature Ben Carter on this television show after an NBA game when he's not under contract to us and will not be under contract to us. That's kind of just a weird pro wrestling thing that is kind of fun to look back on.
Miro, Kip, and Penelope are out with Tony Schiavone. Tony did a lot of work on this show. I feel like recently he's like very involved on the show. Kip says it's the first ever wrestling wedding on TNT. I thought he was going to claim it was the first ever wrestling wedding, which I thought was funny.
Are we sure? Didn't like David Flair and Miss Hancock get married?
That I saw people discussing that.
Maybe that was a Thunder.
What was that on TBS?
TBS.
Yeah. Right. Or was it WCW Pro or Saturday Night? I mean,
The David Flair wedding was absolutely on WCW Nitro.
Okay.
So
were they preempted for the dog show that week? Oh, no, that was USA. USA had the dog show.
By the way, by the way, it happened on September 11th. 2000.
Wow.
I was so excited for a second that they did that. Then I was like, oh, wait, no, they were dead at that point.
Yeah, no, it was exactly 1 year before.
The death of WCW for sure caused 9/11.
Yeah.
I think the data is clear.
Yeah, if you could indulge me for a second, what would WCW would have done on 9/11 if they were still alive?
Oh, fuck, man, I don't know. Because you got to assume that Kevin Nash would still be booking.
Oh, yeah.
Major Guns would have rejected Team Canada and gone back to a flag print bikini.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah, General Erection, you know, I mean, they had to bring him in for something.
General Erection going to the center of the ring and laying an American flag in it like John Cena.
I'm so mad that actually, now that you mentioned this, that we didn't get to see what WCW would have done in response to 9/11.
Okay, it's hard to imagine them doing something more offensive than Muhammad Hassan, but I think they would have, right?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, it matters who has the pencil. If it's Kevin Nash, DDP.
I don't know. Nash is. I don't know. Tough to say about Nash. Nash is at least like vocally anti-racist.
Now. Yeah, but everybody was more racist in 2000 and 2001.
That's true.
I don't know. By everyone, I mean all white people were more racist then.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm looking at their last pay-per-view, Greed.
Greed, yes.
To try to see like if there's...
Mike Sanders would have to be involved in what happens in, for the memorial.
Team Canada was heavily... And Hugh G. Rection was around. He was on that show.
I'm telling y'all, it would have ended with General Hugh G. Rection laying a flag down in the ring, you know, and then saying that he's going to go and sign up for the military and end up like Pat Tillman.
I see that Sean O'Hare was on this show, and I can't now stop from thinking about the thing that Alan Forel posted earlier from Tanahashi, where he was basically like, Sean O'Hare was so fucking hot that it was hard for me to wrestle him.
He winked and I realized he's so cool. This is that American big star appeal.
He was just, he literally said it's hard to wrestle someone with that much sexual energy or something like that. I gotta find the tweet now.
I mean, it's not an issue sometimes with just wrestling in general. The person has just too much like raw sexual energy. We cannot.
Oh yeah. He said, he certainly had that U.S. wrestler aura to him. It's tough facing a guy with that much sex appeal. He had the mental edge for that match.
God.
Because all Tana could think about was how hot he was.
Tanahashi is so cool.
He is.
God.
He doesn't mind to admit that Sean O'Hare was just a fucking babe who really got in his head. So
I mean, the world's full of babes and hunks, and we just have to accept it. And Tanahashi is secure enough of himself to say, yes, Scott O'Hare, big fucking hunk. Couldn't wrestle my best game against him because I was so distracted by him being a hunk.
I'd really like our listeners, is what I was looking for, to reach out to us with your ideas of what WCW would have done to commemorate September 11, 2001.
I can't believe I just broke the show by asking that question.
That has really ruined my life because it's all I'm so mad about it now. All right.
Yeah, we're talking about Miro, right?
Right. So Kip says the wedding's going to be a big deal to everyone at home because their lives suck. So they're looking forward to this. They're going to show a video on the Tron about the best friends, but instead the best friends music hits. But we find out that it was a joke and Kip and Miro and Penelope are just having a laugh. And instead, they put up some footage of Trent getting in an ambulance with Chuck and Orange. And then after that, they announced that the wedding is going to happen on February 3rd at Beach Break.
Beach Break. Yeah, no, this segment was, other than Kip, the rest of the segment was amazing. Miro shouting out things like off microphone, yelling out that he will be in the house for that. That made my night. And I guess they're going to have a beach wedding. You know, this might be the first ever wrestling beach wedding on TNT. So
no, didn't. No, it wasn't the wedding. I don't know. Isn't there a... What am I thinking of about Randy Savage on the beach?
Well, I mean, there's the photo of him with the WWF title where he's looking off into the distance, pondering on a pier, if that's what you're thinking. Because I think about that photo a lot.
No, there's also I wasn't thinking about this, but there's also one of like Savage like doing a bench press on the beach. This is like early Nitro WCW.
Hell yeah.
But
hell yeah.
I think there's like a later era. I don't know. I don't know what I'm thinking of, so I'm probably wrong about this, but it may be the first wrestling beach wedding.
I mean, I can't think of another one. I mean, other great events on wrestling on the beach, Yuji Nagata working out on the beach with the current great Okarn, just looking incredibly awkward as women were falling all over them. But Yuji Nagata's like, hell yeah, this is great. And Oka obviously wanted to go look at anime.
Okay, what I was thinking of was Randy Savage's shoot wedding to his wife, Lynn.
Right, yeah.
That definitely happened on the beach, but not a wrestling wedding. I apologize. Okay, then we had Dustin Rhodes defeating Evil Uno with a running bulldog. Real SMW hours here with a bulldog finish. After the match, Uno was on his knees asking for Dustin to shake his hand, but a babyface Dustin pretends to shake his hand but kicks him in the head instead. Stu Grayson attacks. Lee Johnson tries to make the save but fails. Same for QT. But then Lee Johnson recovers. The big shoddy comes back and cleans house.
I kind of like how this angle is going. Like, we've talked about how they're kind of treadmilling it with like the inner circle. But like this idea of the real B team, or really, to be honest, the C team, seeing that the gun club win all the time, getting to face inner circle like this, and Lee Johnson getting more time and getting to see more of that. And he was the one who cleaned the house, not QT's great forearms or Dustin Rhodes. You know, it's pretty effective. You know, I'm interested to see where this can go. I mean, would it be like Uno, Grayson, and maybe they try to pull, this is where they really try to pull in Adam Page. That's an interesting kind of program.
Okay. Then we had the Sean Spears interview that we talked about. The only part we didn't mention is that he said, you tell Tony and all the executive vice pricks, I'll come back if I feel like it. I liked that. I thought that was funny. Sheeta was backstage with Dasha, but Abaddon attacked. Michael Nakazawa there to help Hikaru Shida. Very nice of him. And then Hikaru Shida defeated Alice Gracia with the Falcon Arrow.
I guess I should appreciate that they did the attack angle before the match. Well, I guess and after the match as well.
Yes. Yeah. It happened on both sides.
It was a nice variation on the formula where they have an attack angle in every single segment that it's like, no, this attack angle happens before the segment.
It actually also happened in the middle of the match.
Yeah, we're reaching a saturation point where there's just going to be attack angles happening simultaneously with every match up and down the card.
Yeah. And in the main event, the Young Bucks defeated the Acclaimed. Matt pinned Max Caster after the BTE trigger. Kind of thought that was interesting in that I think everyone agrees that Bowens is like the wrestling prospect of the two. So interesting that Caster took the pinfall. All right. If you enjoy the show, you want to support the show as we head into the new year, you can head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. Don't hit that fast forward 15 seconds, baby, because we got the awards coming in a little bit. Also, it's important to listen to how you can support us. Yeah, we got three tiers. The middle tier, the $5 tier, gets you all the audio content that we do. This past week, we had a best of 2020 episode that, frankly, was very well responded to, or whatever. Imagine I said something that makes sense. And made me wonder, like, and I talked about this with Mike on Light, do we talk about wrestling too much on this show?
Well, who complains that we don't talk about wrestling enough? Like one YouTube commenter?
Also, Oatgan.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to hear about the Lee Johnson.
He wants us to really break down the matches on Dark, which Mike and I do not do.
Yeah. I don't have a ton to say about matches.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I just look at if they're successful or not. So,
and then, of course, we also have our Light show where Mike and I break down. Not really. Dark. We just talk about what was funny from Dark. We previewed Dynamite, and then Nate hits the vlog quick hits. But there was lots of good stuff on there this month. Mike did a really good show with Brandon Howard Thurston. I hope everybody will check that out. We have a Discord that's a lot of fun. We, you know, everybody, even for late night Dynamite, we were in there chatting last night. So join us, won't you? Patreon.com.
Yeah, we were up to the exotic hour of 11 p.m.
That's right. Central time. A lot of us live in Eastern time, Nate.
I can't account for
after
your poor decisions. That's
buddy.
Take that upon yourself.
I've made a lot of poor decisions. But a poor decision I haven't made is being a part of patreon.com/everythingelite. Come over and subscribe. All right, no, that's not true. But the E Awards are next. I was going to say we're going to close it out with that, but we usually talk about what's going to be on next week's show at the end. So,
yeah.
E Awards, baby. You can go listen to the nomination show on the Patreon. That was a lot of fun. Basically, each of us gets to nominate one, and then we do a wild card where we have to reach a consensus on the fourth selection. Then we post it on our Patreon for people to vote. We got a very high level of participation, which I was very happy about. And we got some winners. So the men's match of the year, last year it was Cody versus Dustin Rhodes from Double or Nothing. This year, the winner, Nate's pick, Hangman Page. So,
do you want to? So I haven't looked at him. I don't want to look at him. You want to read the nominees?
Okay. That's a good idea.
And I feel like don't attribute things like Mike put in. I saw that Mike put in one of the Patreon posts like, oh, Nate picked the Revival for Tag Team of the Year. No, to be clear, I did not vote for the Revival for Tag Team of the Year. I nominated them. because I feel like they had to be part of the discussion. So I don't want to be accused of voting for the revival, basically. I guess I didn't really vote at all.
I mean, it would be hard because you're not a subscriber to the Patreon.
Yeah, I don't have a Patreon account, so that makes it tough.
So, yeah. Okay, men's match of the year. Here were your nominees. That's right. I guess a lot of people listen to this didn't listen to the nomination show because they're not patrons. So here are the nominees. The Parking Lot Brawl, Hangman Page and Kenny Omega versus the Young Bucks, Pac versus Kenny, Iron Man match, or the Stadium Stampede. Those were your nominees. And our patrons have voted for the Hangman Page and Kenny Omega versus the Young Bucks match. You got 63% of the vote.
It's probably a worldwide leader for this category.
Yeah, I think that you look at what might pop up on global top 10 lists at the end of this year, and I think that this probably will be the high watermark for AEW. So, made sense to me. And that margin, it was something that you kind of got to a point where it was just like there are some clear candidates and some that just weren't that kind of candidates. And I feel like that those four, even with the one that I nominated being the Pac and Kenny Ironman matches, are ones that were really well thought of.
Women's match of the year last year, Riho versus Nyla Rose, the initial Dynamite match. This year, the nominees were Riho versus Nyla Rose, the TV match where Nyla Rose won the title. Nyla Rose versus Hikaru Shida at Double or Nothing 2, Hikaru Shida versus Penelope Ford at Fighter Fest, and the wild card match was Thunder Rosa versus Serena Deeb. Your winner for the second year in a row, Riho versus Nyla Rose, with 49% of the vote.
Congrats.
I don't know if you guys want to comment or you just want me to keep going.
Well,
I have no takes on this category.
Yeah.
Good match.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we did already do comments on all of this stuff.
We miss Riho.
We miss Riho.
Badly.
And I guess unless Riho doesn't come back, we'll have new winners in this category next year.
Yeah. Yeah. The men's wrestler of the year last year, Cody, was the winner. This year, our nominees were Jon Moxley, Orange Cassidy, Brody Lee, and I almost said Mike Lee, and Kenny Omega. The senator from Utah was not able to sneak into the nominations. Jon Moxley, your runaway winner. I think the most runaway winner, 77% of the vote. Yeah, that was the highest percentage in any category.
Yeah, he had a really good year. Acted the part of a champion better than anybody has maybe done in the West for a very long time. Turned in some great promos, had some great matches. Kind of mostly just wished that his big run capping match with Kenny had been better, but we're still moving ahead with that storyline. So yeah, no, great year for Jon Moxley. He's also, I think, was top of the PWI 500, I want to say. And as I imagine, yeah, going to be, on top of Wrestler of the Year voting again all across the world.
Yeah, I mean, he had probably the best babyface American title run in a long time. And the big shame of it was that almost all of it happened without crowds. And I think that's something that's a testament to how good his run was. It still came across like this, even though the majority of it, there were no crowds. And then at most, you had 1,000 people there for one of his matches. So,
Women's Wrestler of the Year, the 2019 winner was Riho. I'm just thinking about how funny it is that neither of the winners last year of Wrestler of the Year were nominees this year in either category. So the women's nominees were Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, Hikaru Shida, and Thunder Rosa. Hikaru Shida runs away with it, 68% of the vote.
Yeah, she was the only pushed woman for, I don't know, at least 40% of the year.
Yes, easy one. Tag team of the year last year, it was Santana and Ortiz. Wow, they really didn't get as much focus this year. The nominees for this year, the best friends, Nate's pick, FTR, Omega and Page, and the Young Bucks. And the winners were Omega and Page, I think rightfully so. 63% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, they carried the division with those tag team title matches for a long time. look back and, you know, think more fondly maybe about the Best Friends, maybe just because they're a more established team and they're still together. But hopefully they're in line for a push and they can get to this level next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you look at the categories, and it's probably something that really says how strong the year was from Omega and Paige, the fact that they clearly ran away with it from more established teams.
Show of the year, last year, Double or Nothing. This year, the nominees, Revolution, Double or Nothing, Fighter Fest Night 1, Saturday Night Dynamite. Revolution, I guess Revolution actually tied Moxley. I missed that earlier. They also got, it also got 77% of the vote.
Tied for the most running awayest.
Yes. Largest share of the vote. Feud slash storyline of the year. Last year was Cody and Jericho. This year, the nominees, Kingston, the Kingston Moxley feud, Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho, Best Friends versus Santana and Ortiz. And the wild card pick was Team FTW versus Team Darby. And the Kingston and John Moxley feud wins with 67%.
Yeah, great fucking promos. Really got a lot out of Eddie Kingston in his relatively short run in this company so far.
I'm realizing this is just a hard segment to do. You know, yeah. Should have thought it out more, perhaps.
I mean, I'll say this.
I feel like it's going fine.
Okay.
Yeah, good. It's going good. It's going great. You're doing a great job, Champ.
Thanks.
Keep it
Thanks.
Up. I will say that looking overall, there's only one of these that I was surprised by the result. So when we get to it, I will have a lot to say.
All right. Best on interviews. Cody in 2019. Cody really racked up the wins the first year of AEW. Our nominees this year, Eddie Kingston, Taz, Ricky Starks, and John Moxley. Eddie Kingston wins. Ricky Starks got zero votes, folks.
Yeah. Very good. That was a bad nominee for me, even though I think a great promo.
I think it's a good one. It's just, this was a year with the other three guys in the category were really good this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to look a lot like your top five best on promo Observer Awards is going to be all of these guys. So yeah. What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
Best on Twitter, Chuck Taylor was your winner in 2019. Nominees this year, Nyla Rose, Big Swole, Chuck Taylor, and Luther. And Chuck Taylor, our only, I think, repeat winner.
What was this percentage? How'd Luther do?
61% for Chuck Taylor. And this is me trying to load the post up to figure out.
This is what it sounds like, folks. Peek behind the curtain. You can hear the gears turning in the laptop.
How many years until we have to retire Chuck Taylor from this category? Because I feel like that there's a legitimate conversation that Chuck Taylor might just win this category as long as this category exists.
That's certainly possible, especially with our patrons who are, it's a very pro-Chuck, group. Luther came in second, but he only got 19% of the vote.
I don't know. I feel like the curse of Twitter is that after you've read enough of somebody's thoughts and basically solve them, then you will get annoyed about them regardless of how much you might like them. I feel like that's kind of systematic within Twitter. So, you know, a couple more years of Chuck doing his little Chuck thing. Be like, all right, Chuck, we get it. Fucking move on, buddy.
Breakout star 2019 was Darby Allin. The nominees this year, Will Hobbs, John Silver, Ricky Starks, Anna Jay, the closest of any category. Ricky Starks is your winner with 48%. John Silver right behind him with 43%.
We had a lot of debates about the nominees on this one.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
We really did.
I was vindicated as my nominee won. So it's okay, Nate. John Silver is not as much of a breakout star as Ricky Starks.
Well, at least my nominee did better than Aaron's nominee.
That's fair.
Well, but what we're not accounting for here is I don't know in what order we went. So, you know,
yeah,
sometimes you get to nominate somebody before other
people. No, this one I specifically remember. We all thought we had – actually, we all said our nominee at the exact same time.
Exact same time. And they were all different. So
that's right. We all thought it was super obvious.
Wait, but didn't we all miss someone on this?
No.
No, or was there another category? There's a category.
We forgot Brandon Cutler and Peter Avalon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Very funny. Okay. intangible of the year. This is basically where we try to throw something in that we couldn't find a spot for anywhere else. Oh, and I lied to you last category. This was the closest category.
Jesus.
Excalibur won in 2019, which problematic choice for us, honestly, looking back. Really wish we could take that one back. This year, the nominees were Dark Jobbers, Sue, Wardlow, and The Gooch. And Wardlow was your winner with 38% to Sue's 36%.
That surprises me a little bit because Wardlow is like too genuine a selection. All the other ones have a nice sheen of irony on them.
Right.
I hope Mickey Gooch Jr. is doing okay right now, by the way. I feel like I said that on the nomination show too.
We have a fairly sincere patrons, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say we're probably more irony poisoned than our audience, yes.
Yes, for sure. Which, you know, maybe we should think about that. But I can't.
I will never think about anything.
It's just my brain. Dark Wrestler of the Year. This was the first year of the category. The nominees were Red Velvet, The Little Hurt, Frankie Thomas, Alex Gracia, after I buried her on the show earlier. She did get nominated for Dark Wrestler of the Year. And Brandon Cutler was the wild card. And the wild card won. 58% of the voters went with Brandon Cutler himself.
The heart and soul of BTE.
Indeed.
The nemesis of good old JR.
And finally, best shoulder content. The nominees were what you would expect. Being the Elite, A Shot of Brandy, Miro on Twitch, Sammy Guevara's vlog, and the classic one, Being the Elite, 51% of the vote.
Don't like it. I think that it was a weak year for Being the Elite. I think Sammy Guevara's vlog is ascendant. Miro on Twitch is excellent. And of course, The Shot of Brandy is the best thing that they put out. So I have to say that I'm disappointed in this one. It should have been A Shot of Brandy by far.
Yeah, I can't call it a weak year for BTE because they basically fully rehabbed the Dark Order and turned them into like the hottest thing in the company after having been like the worst thing in the company.
That's fair. That's fair.
And, you know, some good bits interspersed.
Anna.
Sammy G Vlog is, of course, the hipster's choice. That's the one that's on the rise that all the, you know, Cody has jumped ship to that vlog famously. And so that's the one to keep an eye on. A Shot of Brandy, I guess they have to retire or make it a, what do you replace it with? An espresso shot of brandy? Is that the solution on account of she's with child?
I think you have to find a new host or do everything non-alcoholic.
A shot of...
I'm gonna tell you guys, a lot of people, I think, continue to drink in moderation while pregnant.
Yes, but they don't drink in moderation on that show.
That's true.
She gets sloshed.
That's true. Okay, coming up next week on Dynamite, the New Year's Smash Night One. It's a big ass show. We've got the AEW Men's World Title, Kenny Omega versus Fenix. John Moxley will return, so he is definitively not going to be in Japan for Wrestle Kingdom.
You doubted Tony Khan when he said that he was not going?
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, I've been trying to tell people for a while, he would have had to have been in Japan last week.
Well, nobody knew where he was last week, so he certainly could have been there. He wasn't on Dynamite.
I had a good reason to believe that he was in the States.
Well, I don't stalk his house, so I didn't.
Don't stalk his house either. I did. You make me seem like a creep.
I don't try
to
peek in his blinds and see what's going on. So I don't know. All I know, I'm just a lowly podcaster. I don't know anything. The AEW Women's World Title, Hikaru Shida versus the Sheenom, Abaddon, and Jake Hager versus Wardlow. So a pretty big card here.
Yeah, Wardlow gets to wrestle. How about that?
That's right. Wardlow hasn't wrestled, what, that tag match that he had with MJF?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been a while.
Okay, is this going to be the Jake Hager match that delivers, Aaron? I mean, he's in there with the unimpeachable Wardlow, who delivers in every segment that he's in. And now he's got the toughest task of his career against Jake Hager, the guy whose segments never deliver.
The 2019 Intangible of the Year winner, Wardlow.
2020, you mean?
Deliverable, the deliverable object against the undeliverable Racist? I don't know.
Parcel.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the least well-built of the Jake Hager singles matches.
For sure.
Well, the tension has been brewing for a while, but then they're just like, now the match is happening.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel as hot as it might have at one time. So I have not gotten worked into thinking this is going to be good. But there's still time for them to release a road to that will get me talked 100% into it. Then after that, the New Year Smash Night 2 with Snoop Dogg, the host of the Go Big Show. As Oatgan pointed out, that's now how he's being billed. So that's
what
his biggest
famous for, I think.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. That, of course, is going to have the TNT title, Darby Allin versus Brian Cage. And they announced Cody Rhodes versus Matt Sydal. So Cody is just having completely fucking random matches on Dynamite. That's his new thing.
I mean, it's happening. I'm stoked. These two guys never have had a singles match, which is kind of wild.
Well, I would say I'm looking forward to it, but I don't like to lie to our listeners.
I saw that. This is totally unrelated. And that it's mostly unrelated. I saw that Kenta liked the tweet where Matt Sydal said he was signed to AEW. The only time they would have crossed paths would have been like Ring of Honor, right?
Yeah, no, they would have known each other because of Ring of Honor. And Sydal was over in Japan a lot before.
Yeah, but not before with, Kenta not with New Japan or Noah when Kenta was in any of those companies.
But Kenta didn't. I mean, like, it's a small circle sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small business. Just thought it was funny to see. I was like, oh, what's going on with Kenta? Is he liking any more Trump tweets? But no. That's misrepresentative. Wait. He liked a Trump tweet that was like Trump's insane dancing video that got removed.
Oh, the Macho Man one.
Yes, that's what okay. I liked, but which you can certainly like for non.
So that's just a good video.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I'm trying to search to see if they've ever if Kenta and Matt Sydal have ever been in a match together.
It would have had to be in Ring of Honor, but at that time. Matt Sydal, no, I don't think it would have lined up.
Well, cage match is not helping me, so it's just not loading anything. So I guess we'll never know.
We will never know if this match happens.
Yes, we'll never know.
And if it does, you're going to at Aaron, at Aaron Like the Car.
Sure.
And you're going to let everyone, you may have seen that one person has said, hey, Aaron, they had this match in the state. That's fine. You can keep on sending it to him. Just keep on telling Aaron when this match might have happened.
Oh, wait. Well, I guess we kind of addressed this, but we did have a tweet earlier today of somebody wanting us to address
having Jericho in that first segment with the NBA fans.
I guess we talked about that, didn't we?
NBA fans, the younger demographic. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about it.
Oh!
It...
Well, first of all, yeah, I just wanted to make sure we talked about that since someone specifically asked us to. But I think we covered it. But Kenta and Matt Sydal had a match at Ring of Honor's The Bitter End in Philly in November 2006.
Hmm. See, now everyone go tweet at Aaron that they had it in November 2006. Yeah.
Yeah, it happened. Okay. I was just trying to do some...
Housekeeping.
Some constituent services there. We got a on the Jumping Bomb Audio Twitter account. We got a tweet that says, "This is someone who follows us." They tweeted, "At JBomb Audio Podcast is like throwing literal shit at a wall with RNG aim and trying to predict where it's going to hit."
Do you know what RNG aim would mean?
No, I was hoping.
So it's random number generator.
Okay. This person follows us. Why? I mean, this sounds mean. This sounds really mean. And it's like our last episode was just like, you know, bet we were just doing awards from the year, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are they so mad about?
Anybody that tags anybody in a tweet is a fucking lunatic. That's what it comes down to. Like, shut the fuck up. It's like Excalibur tagged Giannis about missing his free throws.
That was insane. Before.
Like, what are you doing? Like, did you see your own mentions whenever you fuck up or whatever and people yelling at you or like, hey, remember when you were racist a couple years ago? Like, yeah. You would think you'd like be like, okay, maybe I don't tag this guy about missing his free throws.
I think if I were Excalibur and like all the shit that is out about Excalibur was out there, I would probably never criticize anyone publicly ever.
Insane.
Just set my Twitter up to just auto retweet what the PR team wants me to retweet.
So if I were friends with Giannis, I would just be like, hey, Giannis, tweet these videos at Excalibur.
Just body him.
Tweet out to all your followers. Like, look at this motherfucker.
Yeah, that'd be sick. This you? Then...
yes, that'd be perfect. All right. Well, I think that's it for the show. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, subscribe to the podcast. Please give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And support the show this holiday season over at patreon.com/everythingelite. Is this the last show of the year? Or will the next one, I guess, technically be on New Year's Eve? Are we going to record on New Year's Eve? What the fuck do we have
to
do?
I'm not going out.
Yeah. Definitely not going out.
Okay. It's not the last show of the year. But anyway, thanks, everybody.
But if we record it on the last day of the year, then you might not get it until next year. So right. This probably is the last show of the year.
So thanks, everyone, for listening this year. We appreciate it. I know the year has been shitty, but I hope everybody has. If you're celebrating Christmas, hope you have a nice one. I think Hanukkah's over now, right? Is Hanukkah over?
Yeah, Hanukkah's over. Yeah.
Hope you had a nice Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all the many varied holiday celebrations. And thanks for spending, what, an hour and 46 minutes so far with us?
An hour 30. I started the stream before y'all got on.
Thanks for spending 90 minutes with us.
If we keep talking, it'll get longer, Aaron, and then you'll be proven correct. So I don't know. I know it's important to you to be proven correct over Mike.
Yes, that is important to me. And just wait, because I have receipts.
Oh, what a tease.
I mean, I have brain damage, so come on. Come on.
All right. Okay, thanks everyone. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.